Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Interest in early voting is surging across the battleground state. Coming up, what the latest trends tell us. Plus, fundraising in the race for the state's top education job soars to new historic levels. And we got you covered on what you need to know about the statewide referendum on your ballot, asking you about the state's voter ID laws. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for March 28th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Well, we are now just days away from the April 1st election, and we have a lot of election coverage that we're going to get into. First, starting with what the latest absentee voting statistics are looking like here in the battleground state. And really, the top headline is they're significantly up compared to 2 years ago when, of course, there was another high-stakes state Supreme Court race on the ballot back in 2023. Now, the numbers that you're looking at are as of yesterday on the Wisconsin Elections Commission website. More than, or I should say closer to 550,000 people have voted with absentee by returning their ballots to local clerk's office. In-person numbers of people casting ballots there are closer to upwards to 288,000. And this is, of course, all after just about 10 or so days of early voting. But looking at specifically just from 1 week, looking at that data, absentee voting, the number of ballots returned to clerks was as up to 48% compared to 2 years ago, so which is a pretty significant uptick. We're going to dive into kind of which counties are seeing, larger increases as well, but it's also want to put in perspective that it's difficult to really tell whether these are new voters or are these voters typically the ones that turn out anyways in every single election.
So you know my geekdom and how I'm with numbers and stuff. I don't have access to the voter files that tell me so-and-so cast a ballot early, that person votes every spring or is a November voter. I've talked to a couple of my sources this week. They weren't seeing yet a real surge in non-traditional April voters, people who vote November, for example, but not spring. So this is why that's important. It's good for Brad Schimmel that interest is up in early voting in red areas. That's good. Unless he's cannibalizing his election day vote. So let's kind of look at the big picture. Republicans, generally speaking, have not been big on early voting, right? The big push started in 2024. So, okay, great. You're getting more early votes in these red areas. But if you're going to vote in April anyway, you're not expanding the electorate. Remember, we've talked about this a lot of times. Brad Schimmel needs Trump voters to come out. Trump voters, not to stereotype all of them, but most of them, from talking to people, are not usually spring voters. They are November every 4 years for Donald Trump. Schimmel needs those voters to get out. If you're not getting those voters, you're not expanding the electorate. Now, the caveat is all this legwork being done by Americans for Prosperity, Turning Point, Elon Musk PAC, those Trump voters are more in-person voting people, right? They don't trust mail. Yes, Trump has said vote early. Yes, GOP says it's safe. They're not really going to trust the system. They're going to show up on Tuesday. The question is, do they show up on Tuesday? If they show up on Tuesday, good for Schimmel. If all these numbers that are up are just, again, normal spring voters for Republicans, good for Schimmel in some ways, but not enough to expand the electorate.
Right. Also talking to Republicans myself this week, looking at the WOW counties, let's pull up this graphic. This is just as the first week of early in-person voting. Numbers look good for Republicans in the WOW counties, right? I mean, upwards to 60% increase compared to 2023. Specifically, Washington County is interesting, and it has a lot of people talking because it is the most heavily red county out of all three. They are upwards to 66%, if you round up 67% increase from 2 years ago, which really looks good on paper. But again, we don't know what type of voters these are. Are they targeting the young conservative voters who typically don't vote in non-presidential years? That's the big question ahead. Meanwhile, things are also looking promising for Democrats in the Democratic strongholds, right, of Dane and Milwaukee County. Percentages are also up on the graphic as you see there. Dane 60%, Milwaukee 59% after the first week of in-person absentee voting. Now, these are the ballots that have been returned to clerks so far. This is not people physically going to the polls or they're just handing off their ballot. But still, I think it's just going to be fascinating to see. While everything looks good for both sides right now, I think the question, too, is why are we also seeing a lot of individuals like Elon Musk, who says he's coming to Wisconsin on Sunday? Is this somewhat of a panic? Do we need to have more people on the grounds? Do we need to urge people to get to the polls? And obviously, his incentives are going up as well, JR.
So, yeah, but real quick about the Democratic counties. They have a higher platform to start from 2 years ago. So when you see percentages, they're not as high percentage-wise as those red counties. They start from a higher point, though. If you look at raw numbers of what's been requested and returned, if you look at just requested ballots, Dana-Milwaukee County, they have more requested ballots, increase raw numbers, than the WOW counties do. So yes, percentage-wise, they're up. But raw numbers are still plugging along. But again, who turns out? If this is just keeping the Janet Prosewicz coalition together for Crawford, great. You know, 1 million people voted in 2023. But if she gets more people out than that, that's even better for her looking in the fall.
All right. And we're going to highlight, of course, some other key endorsements that happened this week. It was after we taped the show on Friday that President Trump vocally voiced his support for Brad Schimmel in the state Supreme Court race. And meanwhile, a few days later, former President Barack Obama threw his backing behind Susan Crawford. We also had a telephone town hall that President Trump held with Brad Schimmel yesterday as well. And like I just mentioned, we're going to be seeing Elon Musk here on the grounds here in Wisconsin. We do not know where the location yet. But he says there he is going to be handing out two additional $1 million checks to voters who have already voted early, saying in a tweet that this election is so important. And it was earlier in this week that he did already award $1 million to a man in Green Bay. And this is all part of his initiative with his super PAC that he's been doing on the ground. They're door knocking, investing. You know, he's upward, I think, to $19 million now, JR, invested in there.
That's way
That's old, but I know it's $20 million and above. But he's still handing out even more millions to individual voters. I think the big question is it going to work?
So the petition thing is interesting because it's $100 per person to sign a petition so you oppose activist judges. It's really a way to get your contact information to find sympathetic conservative voters and turn them out. Contact them and encourage them to vote for Brad Schimmel. That's probably pretty legal. The question is, what's behind his tweet from, I think it was late last night, saying, I'm coming to Wisconsin. I'm going to give out two $1 million checks to show my appreciation for you voting. State law is clear. You cannot offer anything of value to somebody for voting, to cause them to vote or tell them not to vote. Now, I'm old enough to remember back in 2000 when a Democratic activist offered cigarettes to homeless people in Milwaukee to induce them to vote. There was this huge kerfuffle about that. This is a whole different ballgame. Now, calling lawyers this morning and ask them what they think. Some are like, this is not good. This is not legal. One offered, well, maybe it's okay. Do you have to show proof you voted to get into the rally on Sunday, the speech? How are they going to check? Do you have to, you have to show like I voted sticker?
Right.
There's a My Vote website shows you've actually voted. Do they check it with the door to make sure you actually cast? How do they pick somebody who's voted to give them money? So maybe there's some gray area there, but on the surface, it seems like this might be problematic. But it's also part of this bigger effort by Musk that is well north of $20 million. So there's America PAC, which by itself has reported $12 million to the Ethics Commission in terms of independent expenditures. Those are the express advocacy, vote for, vote against. Much of that's canvassing, voter contacts, get people to turn out to vote. Then he's got Building America's Future. They're about $8 million in change between what I've tracked from Ad Impact, which looks at ads, and what they've reported to the state for mail. Then you have Musk with $3 million of his own pocket to the state GOP, so $23 million. Now we're adding in a million-dollar check to a guy in Green Bay, two more million-dollar checks, whatever the $100 a pop is, so we're north of $26 million. Now I don't know how much America PAC and Build America's Future are from Musk specifically, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're not reporting stuff to the state about they're getting their money just yet.
Yeah.
Or who's giving it behind what's, anyway. But that guy has got to have the biggest influence in some ways in this race beyond the candidates themselves. It's amazing.
It is. It's a lot of money. And when you compare cigarettes to $1 million, I think there's quite a difference over such a 25 years ago, the last time this was questioned in the state. We also have heard from the Department of Justice warn Musk that this could possibly be illegal. It's a similar practice that he did for President Donald Trump leading up to November election. I think also what Democrats, the response has been, of course, high criticism of this. They say, all along, even before these $1 million checks were handed out, calling them that they're trying to buy a seat on the court. Brad Schimmel is embracing the support regardless, though. Talking to him in the campaign trail yesterday, he wasn't aware of the $1 million winner in Green Bay, but he's not, I guess, denouncing it per se. But again, this is once again a topic that we've talked about all along throughout this race of how this is. Many see this race as a referendum on President Donald Trump. And when you look at it from the perspective of the president and Elon Musk, they want to be able to flex their muscles and say, look what we did in Wisconsin if they win this election, absolutely, right? And then for Democrats, it's back to the drawing board because we've talked about it as well. A lot of Democrats are pretty much exhausted right now. But is the enthusiasm of that this is a referendum on Trump going to get people to the polls? Or is it the issue of abortion? Or is it the issue of Act 10? I mean, who knows? There's a lot of factors now at play. But I think, you know, looking back at other elections, this is really the first election that some people tell me it's a referendum almost on Elon Musk alone.
So, look, here's the math for Brad Schimmel, okay? So go back to 2023. 1.8 million people turned out in Wisconsin. 1 million of them voted for Janet Protasiewicz. 800,000 change for Daniel Kelly. One, can Democrats keep the Protasiewicz coalition together? 2 years ago, you were less than 9 months off of the Supreme Court of the United States overturning Roe v. Wade. You had a referendum almost on quote-unquote rigged legislative maps that Protasiewicz ran against. There was some kind of fuel there. There's still abortion in this race. Crime is a dominant issue and things. You're in the early stage of the Trump administration. Democrats nationally are furious. Not just at Trump and Elon Musk, but at their own party. So for Democrats, they want to win this race because they need to show that they can get off the ground and they can get organized. For Republicans, they don't want a bad mark for Donald Trump. Look at legislative race in Pennsylvania this week, Trump's seat, Democrats flipped it, low turnout race. Stefanik, Representative Stefanik, who was going to be appointed the UN ambassador, they pulled back the nomination this week. Why? She's got a +9 GOP seat in New York. They're worried about that seat because in Florida is a special election next week. It's a +20 or +30 Trump district that is like even Steve in the polls. There is a surge of Democratic enthusiasm in low turnout races. Can Brad Schimmel drive the turnout with the help of Donald Trump and Elon Musk and Americans for Prosperity and all the other groups, drive the turnout above what it was 2 years ago? He needs to get 200,000 more people out than voted for Daniel Kelly. That's no easy task. But if he can get that parity, that gives him a better path. Now, that's assuming that Crawford keeps the Protasiewicz coalition together. Every person who drops off that list from Protasiewicz from 2 years ago, that makes Schimmel's path easier. But can you do it? The Trump voter has not shown that he or she will turn out unless Trump's on the ballot. That's where I'm skeptical. And you look at those early absentee ballot numbers. One place is not up dramatically, Western Wisconsin. It's up.
Yeah. Good point.
But Trump did really well in Western Wisconsin. What's wrong with Western Wisconsin? Not really wrong with it necessarily.
Yeah. But well, do we even see Elon Musk go there, right? I mean, who knows where he's going to be in the state?
But there's your math. How do you get to, for Schimmel, get to 2 million people? And Democrats will tell you that they used to love high turnout elections because they won those all the time. Now they love low turnout ones because the casual voters become a populist Trump voter. They want to keep it kind of a nice sweet spot.
All right. To wrap up our conversation on the high stakes race, just want to look at, once again, the historic spending. But we're going to be talking about just individually what the candidates have raised and who's funneling a lot of their money to them, which is the state parties. So for Crawford, the latest fundraiser's report, she raised $27.2 million. On Schimmel's side, $15 million raised. You see from the parties the drop down, that's how much they contributed in that total amount here on your screen. Just something else to put in perspective of how expensive this race, but also what they're doing on the ground game and how much of a difference that we see the Wiz GOP and how much more money and how much more resources they have compared to 2 years ago.
And those numbers are, I took everything from the day they got in the race through the late contribution reports that were filed just, I think, yesterday. So if you, between the close of a reporting period and election, you have to report anything above $1,000 to the state. So that gives you, like, money is still pouring in. We talked before about Crawford and how much she was doing on TV, and the vibe was, you're not doing that $20,000 at a time. Like, you're doing that because the state party's giving you a bunch of money. And they have. I mean, there's nothing to laugh at, $10.7 million. It's more than what they did for Protasiewicz 2 years ago, though we still got time for more money to flow in. What's been amazing is Crawford's individual donor network. She raised $10.5 million from individuals in a six-week period. Yes, a lot of it came from out of state. It all spends the same. To put that in perspective, Tony Evers, during his pre-election period in 2022, a seven-week period, raised $5.5 million from individuals. I've never seen somebody, especially a court candidate, raise that kind of money from individuals in that narrow of a window. It's how naturalized the race has become. It's unbelievable, and it's why she's been able to put so much money on TV, which has negated the overall spending advantage on the Schimmel side because of the coalition, your WMC Issues Mobilization Council, your Musk PACs, these groups that are doing Fair Courts America. She's been able to hold even Steven or have an advantage on points, you know, number of times ads run on air because of all that money she's raised from individuals.
All right. Let's move on to the other statewide race that is on the ballot on
the
Tuesday.
The pebble in the ocean.
Yes. Because it's also another big one. We're just going to be looking quickly at the money between both candidates. JR, you have tracked it with politics. The DPI race is now upwards to $4.5 million, another number we have never seen in a state superintendent race. But on the other hand, too, what's been the rhetoric on the theme of the campaign trail, well, I guess I should say who's really on the campaign trail, is Brittany Kinzer, who considers herself a moderate, even though she called, you know, a blue dog Democrat to you. She's got the backing and the support from Republicans. She is doing a variety of appearances. So it's in a sense like, where is Jill Underlie? She's not participating in as many debates. They did one forum last week, which we talked about on the show. But got to give her credit that she's trying to get her name out there. Yes, Underlie is the incumbent, but that is really something I'm going to be watching for on Tuesday. I do also just want to highlight Kinzer did an event earlier this week talking about school referendums, was asked about it, an issue that, of course, Republicans often defend, that they don't want to increase school funding because, hey, you know, if property taxes want their taxes to go up, they can go through referendum. Meanwhile, Kinzer was a little softer on the stand, saying that she is concerned that too many school districts are having to keep going back to residents over and over and over again to help their school function or get school improvements. So let's first hear from Kinzer, and we'll dive more into this topic afterwards.
I've been hearing across the state, everyone's going to referendum. So that's why I said we need to modernize it, figure out how much we do need. I don't have the answer to it right now.
No, but we're exploring, you know, how you're, because you're saying that the school funding system's out of whack. Okay, so I guess you're agreeing with Governor Evers that referenda is a warning sign about that.
Yes, and there were so many people upset that their taxes had just gone up because they weren't able to afford it. You know, people who are retired or people where their businesses not doing as well this year. And so you could see the real life implications of when taxes go up like that.
Okay, so I think what I'm hearing, and tell me if I'm wrong, that you think we rely too much on the property tax to fund our schools.
I don't know if we rely too much, but right now we're asking for more and more and more every year is what I'm hearing from people across the state.
I'm going to go back to that 4.5 figure because that's unprecedented.
It is. But when you look at the Supreme Court spending, it's not a whole lot. And so the trouble for these guys is they are kind of tied at the hip to the Supreme Court race. Now, Underlie's approach is interesting. Usually as an incumbent, if you're trying to avoid kind of being public, you're trying to avoid it being about you. And so there's a sense that her campaign wants to not have this be referendum on the incumbent, which is a sign to you of how weak she is in some ways as an incumbent. I mean, look at her fundraising. Outside the state Democratic Party, not a whole lot there. Yes, the state GOP has given a lot to Brittany Kinzer, but it's a first-time candidate. She's actually gone out and raised money from individuals. Yes, Supreme Court race going on, sucking up lots of dollars, but she's not raising a whole lot. She's not in public a whole lot. She's trying to make a race about Brittany Kinzer, and the education establishment in Wisconsin almost always gets its way. So you've seen like WEAC and American Federation of Teachers give big money to A Better Wisconsin Together political fund, which has been doing ads knocking Kinzer. So can Kinzer overcome that? And the closer Schimmel runs either to Crawford or beats her, the better Kinzer's chances likely are to win on Tuesday.
Right, or a split ticket, who knows, right? All right, last thing that voters need to be aware about on their ballot, if they don't already, is that they will see yet another constitutional amendment, this time asking you about Wisconsin's voter ID laws. Here's what a yes vote would do. It would have tried Wisconsin's voter ID requirement in the state constitution, which is a move that would make it much harder for a court to strike down the law or for lawmakers to repeal in the future. Meanwhile, no vote, nothing would really change. It would not add the voter ID law to the state constitution. And really, ultimately, regardless of the outcome, when you talk to experts or when you really kind of dive into this, not much is going to change. But it's all about what could possibly happen in the future. And as that is that fear from Republicans that have often said when they talk about this topic and wanting to put this on the ballot, is that if the state Supreme Court remains in liberal control after Tuesday, they do worry that there could be another voter ID lawsuit that would make its way to the court. Well, this, if this passes, which is expected, because most amendments and statewide referendums do pass with flying colors, it's going to be much more difficult.
Remember, amendment the ballot August, Democratic groups bought lots of money to defeat it. Nobody's been spending money against us. It tells you they think it's not worth the effort trying to knock it down.
All right. And we also just want to explain, too, because it was earlier in this week that President Trump signed an executive order, a sweeping one that seeks to reshape how elections are carried out at the state level. Well, we're here to tell you from election officials, and what they've told me this week is that it's not going to have any impact on Tuesday and unlikely to have any impact on future future elections here in the battleground state. For example, Trump's executive order mandates government issue proof of U.S. citizenship on voter registration forms, but Wisconsin is already exempt from using that form. The executive order also threatens to take federal funding away from states if they don't follow the specific mandates. Well, in Wisconsin, elections are funded by the state. I spoke to Ann Jacobs, the chair of WEC, about this issue. Let's first just take a listen from what she had to say about this order.
I've read the executive order, and it's my position that it has absolutely no effect on the April 1 election for Supreme Court here in Wisconsin. It is a wish list of ideas that apparently the president has that he'd like his appointees to implement, but that has nothing to do with our state election that's taking place next week. The state of Wisconsin funds its own elections. Our municipalities fund their own elections. And these sort of weird threats shouldn't impact any of that.
All right, now we're going to shift away from our election kind of recap and previewing Tuesday's ballot to some other news, of course, that happened this week. It was yesterday that Governor Tony Evers announced a new initiative that would recruit laid-off federal workers, including launching a series of spring job fairs that will be happening. Now, this campaign, of course, is aimed at bringing candidates with in-demand and hard-to-fill roles to Wisconsin and state government, and that was according to the governor's office that announced the initiative yesterday.
Yeah, interesting. Remember, the governor has not been a fan of the changes. As we talked before, he also wasn't a fan of trying to dictate to DPI how to do things. So interesting that he knocks it down. Also comes just before election. Obviously, Republicans push this bill now, trying to bring more attention to it with DPI race on the ballot Tuesday.
Yeah, you're talking about the bill that he vetoed this morning.
Yep.
And then we were talking a little bit earlier about the new initiative to lay off federal workers.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. Well, we were going to get to that, too, so I'm glad you recapped that as well. We have not seen the veto message yet about the DPI bill, but we did learn that he did veto that bill, even though he criticized the changes that were actually enacted when he was state superintendent. All right, let's get to stock picks this week. And rising is the man from Green Bay who was the big $1 million winner.
So our first America PAC awardee of $1 million. At first, he was just Scott A. of Green Bay. Then America PAC posted video of him. In that video, he's saying everybody should do what he did, you know, sign the petition, go vote for Brad Schimmel early. This, again, going back to the Musk stuff, is an amazing kind of footnote, chapter, theme of this race for Supreme Court of Elon Musk. If you told me 6 months ago that Elon Musk would be a major figure in the race, I would have said, how and why? But here is this guy who's got his attention is clearly on Wisconsin, illustrates what a massive donor, the world's richest man, can do in a race between the two PACs, personal donations, this stuff going on. It's been amazing to watch it shape it. Now, my question is, how is Musk a motivating factor for or against, right, in this electorate? I've heard people say it's a referendum on Elon Musk. I'm not sure I buy that from my conversations with people, because Musk isn't on the ballot. He's funding a lot of stuff. He drives Democrats crazy. But is he really the the referendum, or is it about Trump? You know, I don't know if it's really a referendum on Trump either. You know, it is a motivator in a lot of ways. It still gets back to Crawford versus Schimmel, but these guys have major influence on why people are going out to the polls to vote and are shaping the electorate. Again, it goes back to this question of, can Trump and Musk and everybody else get all these folks out to vote on Tuesday that voted for Trump in November? Or even like, as Brad Schimmel says, 60% of them.
Yeah.
Now, looking forward, if you're a Republican, you have put all this money in this race. You've got a spending advantage in this race over Susan Crawford. You have Trump engaged, endorsing Schimmel, doing a tele-town hall. You have Musk coming here, giving away million-dollar checks. You've got all this stuff going for you. If you can't win an open seat on Tuesday, what's it mean for 2026 and 2027? Now they're a long ways away. But you're talking about what are your prospects in a spring electorate where it has shifted toward Democrats dramatically under the Trump years. That's a bad thing for you if you lose on Tuesday. For Democrats, it's a bad thing for you because you guys don't have a lot to champion right now nationally. This is the first big test. Granted, a legislative race in Pennsylvania, good news for you. Congressional races being close in Florida could be good news for you. But a statewide contest in a swing state, if you don't win with all this energy, that does not look good for you nationally with all the problems you have right now.
All right, Mix, this week, the Republican Party of Wisconsin, and they're specifically diving into their fundraising numbers.
Hey, they outraised the Democratic Party of Wisconsin in the pre-election period. That doesn't happen very often. In fact, it hasn't really happened.
I don't remember the last time it's happened, yeah.
But you drill down, and it's because of Elon Musk, Liz and Dick Uihlein, Diane Hendricks. Now, Democrats have their big donors, George Soros, J.B. Pritzker, okay? But here's where it gets interesting. I went look at the reports, because the Republicans pulled in like $7 million, Democrats six and change. Donors giving $125 or less. I counted 14 in the entire report for Republicans. More than 500 for Democrats. That tells you this is a sugar high. You have Elon Musk's attention right now. Where's he going to be in October of this year, let alone October of next year, right? Those small dollar donations, they keep the lights on and things humming in off years when you're not having a campaign going on. Republicans, hey, credit to them. They got this money in the door. They're helping Brad Schimmel with it 2 years ago with Daniel Kelly. They haven't shown yet they fixed the fundamental problem of they don't have that small dollar network that is the lifeblood of a campaign and a political party.
All right. And following this week is Evers' capital budget after it was rejected, but it is always, or I should say, in the last four times it's been rejected.
The fourth time was not the charm. Mm-hmm. Look, there's not a surprise what happened, but there's a bigger thing here to think about what it means for the budget. So capital budget, you have the executive budget, which spends money on schools, Medicaid, sex tax levels. You have the capital budget, which actually funds the building projects. Typically goes to the building commission. It's right now split 4-4 between appointees who are Republican and those who are Democratic. Four capital budgets ago, Evers' first one, 2019, was the first time that a capital budget came out of the building commission without a recommendation. Usually, they go through it, say, hey, we like this stuff from the governor. I recommend the Joint Finance Committee. You should do this stuff. They deadlocked in 2019 and 2021 and 2023. 2025. This conversation was interesting because Mary Folkowski, who was Senate president on the commission, said, hey, you know, we're not sure about this bonding number. The governor would bond more in this capital budget than the last five combined. All right? It's like, that's not a great number. We want to revise this. Two, she said, you know, governor, if you'd brought me and others in on corrections, because that's a big piece of this capital budget, reviewing the corrections system, we could have worked on this earlier. But that would require trust. Doesn't exist in the capital right now. So yeah, she's absolutely right from my conversations with people. If Evers had brought in Mark Bourne, the Joint Finance Co-Chair, who's got prisons in his district, been involved in those issues, Mary Folkowski, the Senate President, and started talking in like last fall about these issues, they could have hammered something out. Why would he do that? Because he doesn't trust anybody, and they don't trust him. I mean, there's a broken relationship between Republicans and Democrats in the Capitol. It's not gotten any better. And it makes it harder to do things like hammer out a compromise. So what's going to happen now? They'll take the capital budget. They'll slice it down to what they want it to be. They'll revamp the corrections program. They're not going to close the prisons that he wants or prison space he wants without replacing it, et cetera, et cetera. Then the bigger thing is this entire budget process has just been on hold. You keep hearing over and over again, it's going to take a long time. It might be this problem, it might be that problem. Because there's no trust. There's no working relationship. It's harder to hammer things out. You have basically a standoff, and that's why this budget, which should be done by June 30th,
We'll see about that. All right. Well, before we go, just want to do a quick mention. Due to popular demand, we are going to be on more cable broadcasting times, as you can see here on your screen. And, of course, we will keep being here live at 11 a.m. every Friday on WizEye.org. So wherever you are, you can catch the show, and you can catch it in more broadcasting times as well. All right. That will do it for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, Your Week in Review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.